Yeah, man, we're at El Pacifico, and this is the last night of our 10P to 1A or 1A to 4A show, depending upon where you are. This is it. This is the last of what has been a six-year run here in the overnight, third shift, late night. And beginning tomorrow night, it is a 7P on the West Coast, 10P on the East Coast start. And beginning tomorrow night, we will do our very best to let you know what affiliates are with us. We'll do our very best to bring you back up to speed. We are going to be running a series of Comedy Gold shows through the 8th of July. And on the 8th of July, we relaunch with our new live show. Now, we're going to be on the air tomorrow night. Don't even worry about it. We're going to be doing video cast updates. Don't even worry about that if you have a backstage pass. And we are also going to be experimenting over the short haul, experimenting with free video casts. That's right. You heard me right. For those of you who've never been BSPs but often wondered what it looks like when I'm sitting here doing this, you're going to see it, whether you like it or not.
Well, they don't have to tune in.
Well, that's true. They don't have to tune in.
You say whether you like it or not, it's almost as if you're kicking down the door and forcing it on them, and I don't think anyone would want that.
You say that with a smile on your face.
Well, I'm trying to be nice, but I don't think anyone wants to see Phil Henry walk into their living room and then just spill it all out on the floor like the little Kintner boy.
Jeez, Margaret.
Come, man, that's out of jaws.
What do you mean, jeez, Margaret?
Well, at least smile when you say that.
Why? Because I'm telling you the truth. You walk into people's homes like that, Phil, and it spills out like the Kintner boy.
The little boy from Jaws that got eaten by the shark.
No, he didn't really get eaten up.
Well, that's just it. He didn't really get eaten up. What I'm saying is, Phil, sometimes your show comes spilling into people's homes as if it is a dismembered...
A dismembered human coming out of a shark's guts.
You said it, I didn't. You said that, I didn't.
Yeah, well, that was you talking about, Ms. Gray. Talking about Mr. Henry.
Never mind. If it's such a disastrous, disgusting, and horrific thing to see, then why would you be a part of it?
So that I can bear witness, okay?
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, excuse me, yes. So I can bear witness, as Victor Klemperer's memoirs, I bear witness.
Wait, hold the phone.
No, I bear witness.
Hold the phone. Victor Klemperer, a guy who wrote a book observing the Nazi Reich, a Jewish guy in Germany, and you're comparing you witnessing this radio show to that?
Yes, you. I'm not saying you're a Nazi. I'm saying I'm bearing witness.
Well, that's been a little bit silly.
No one asked you. Excuse me, but I belched because...
Margaret.
No, I belched because of him.
No. I'm not accepting that behavior at all. I want it to stop.
Well, you'll have to tell him to stop.
I bear witness.
That's bad. That's real bad.
Well, what happened to you? What happened to you? Did you get scared or something the other night? What happened? Were you watching that movie? What movie was that? Oh, the Beach Girls and the Monster. Robert was watching it. Now he has a stutter. I told you.
I'm not going to get scared. A rubber-headed monster, forget it.
That movie the other night, that we did our Saturday night movie, folks. It was, we did, actually, that last one was fantastic. The Hitchhiker?
I didn't see it.
Oh, The Hitchhiker was great. I'd never seen it before. It was based on a true story. It was based on a true story.
Was it based on a true story?
Yeah, it was based on a true story.
Based on a true story.
All right. It was awesome. It was a flick with Edmund O'Brien and, now hold on, Frank Lovejoy, Edmund O'Brien, and William Tallman. And it's a true story about a guy in 1950 by the name of William Cook, Billy Cook, who went on a 22-day murder spree. He killed six people, including three children. I mean, the guy was before Charles Starkweather, you know, folks, You know, look, America has had its serial killers and spree killers going all the way back to the revolutionary days. One of these days we'll bring back up those two brothers that were stalking the colonial woods of the southern portion of the United States through the 1760s and on into the beginnings of the Revolutionary War. These two brothers that were murdering people and throwing them in rivers, they were eventually taken down by a posse, literally a citizen's posse, went out looking for these guys. But this guy, William Cook, and the movie The Hitchhiker is based, and I thought it was a tremendous film because it it showed the last of the people that he kidnapped. He didn't kill them. They were two men that were going on a hunting trip into Mexico. And he kidnapped these guys, and he took them into Mexico, and where he was eventually apprehended by the Mexican authorities. But the thing that I found interesting about this was the reality of something like this happening in 1950. And the other thing is, if those of you who are members of my generation...
Oh, not a baby boomer story.
Hold on for a minute, will you, Margaret? You know, you're no spring chicken.
Yeah, you're not a chicken in anything like that.
I'm not a chicken. Are you calling me... You're saying I'm not gutless.
No, you're not what Mr. Henry said.
Hold on. The song by The Doors, Riders on the Storm. You remember that song?
Yeah, I know that one. The Rider on the Storm. When the...
Yeah, there's a rider on the storm and a rider on the storm.
Okay, don't sing it, please. In the song Riders on the Storm, there's a lyric that says, there's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. Well, that's, and then the song goes on to say, if you give this man a ride, sweet memory will die, killer on the road. That is based on William Cook.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Well, how do you know that? How do you know it's not based on Charles Manson?
It's not based on Charles Manson. It's based, you know, Jim Morrison was a very well-read man. He read a lot. He read a lot of literature. He read a lot of fiction. He read a lot of nonfiction. It is based on William Cook, because the people that he killed, he was a hitchhiker, and they picked him up. These people willingly picked this man up. He got into the car with them, and the next thing you know, and the first people that he killed was this couple with their three children. So, you know, this is a guy that, this was just a bad man. When I was a kid, there was a commercial, and some of you guys may remember, does anybody remember Bardahl Motor Oil? B-A-R-D-A-H-L. I think they probably still sell it. Bardahl Motor Oil had a commercial on for a long time, and the commercial was, don't pick up a hitchhiker in the rain. And the hitchhiker in the rain was dirt and grime. So Bardahl was essentially saying, when you get dirt and grime in your engine, it's like you're picking up a hitchhiker in the rain. Well, the message was very clear, and it was, by the way, it was a message that was well thought out by the ad agency that Bardahl had hired to create their national image. And at that time, hitchhikers in the rain, they represented something very evil, something murderous. And so Bardahl used that to their advantage. Don't pick up a hitchhiker in the rain, meaning the dirt and grime thing.
What has this got to do with Jim Morrison?
Yeah.
Will you hold on? What do you mean, Jim Morrison? It's about the hitchhiker, William Cook.
Oh.
Oh, that guy. We're still talking about him?
Yes. And the Bardahl commercial, what I'm trying to tell you is the Bardahl commercial was based upon the country's fear and the resonating anxieties created by the William Cook story, which resonated down through the years. We don't even remember the story, but we remember the effect that it had on the country. The hitchhiker in the rain. Don't pick up a hitchhiker. It was William Cook, Billy Cook, who was picked up by people and murdered them. And so that was the image, and that's the image that Jim Morrison used in that song, Riders on the Storm. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Phil Hendry.
Very nice.
All right, we're going to come back here. A couple of stories. Let's uplift it a little bit. We've got Sandra Bullock's new dress.
She's got a great-looking butt in that dress. There's no question about it.
Would you ask him to clean that up?
Bud, please, okay?
No.
Hold on, okay? We'll be back to talk about Sandra... Well, she does have a nice look. We'll be back to talk about Sandra Bullock's acting on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
There we go. Welcome back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. I hit a button, and when you hit the wrong button around here, man, things happen. It's in that way, it's kind of like the mafia, you know? If you hit the wrong button, you know?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they call a hitman in the mafia, button.
Yeah, the button man.
If you hit the wrong button, well, I don't think they're going to hit the wrong button in the mafia, are they?
I just for some, the guy that the button...
Well,
I'm sorry.
You know, when you start to try to get too fancy, it really...
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the world-famous Phil Henry Show number, and I know we have David G. Hall on the line who wants to discuss with something, discuss with me something that I said just moments ago, which is kind of the way he is. I know he's over at the radio convention there at the L.A. Convention Center. What convention is this, David?
It's just programmers getting together here at the convention center, Phil, and some of the salespeople to address certain problems. The problem that I've got is just before the show went on the air, I've got a bunch of people walking up to me and asking me, is Henry trying to commit wholesale murder of our industry? And I had three people...
What is that based on?
Well, you know what it's based on. It's based on that Variety article that you were talking about during the pre-show. So I've got people in the radio business walking up to me tonight saying, is Phil Henry your partner? Does he hate us so much that he's trying to commit homicide? He's trying to literally kill people in the radio business.
What is that supposed to mean?
What it means is you were on the air talking about radio digs its own grave. You were talking about that Variety article.
Yeah.
Would you please not yell in my ear?
David, he's been doing that. I don't know what the problem is.
I'm not yelling in your ear.
Yeah, you did. You went, yeah, like that.
I apologize.
All right. So you're going to murder, you know, if there's a dead body tonight.
What? How am I murdering people in the radio business?
You're going to give somebody a heart attack. You keep talking about this article.
The article's right there in Variety.
Yeah, I know. I can read.
Okay, and it says, radio digs its own grave as cultural currents shift. It is an indictment of an entire industry in Variety, not in Radio Inc., not in Al Peterson's column, not in any radio trade, in Variety.
I understand that. So what's the point of you bringing it up and trying to cause radio executives tonight at this function that I'm at and at others across the country to leap out of windows head first?
I doubt seriously if I'm going to get anybody to do that.
Really? Well, if they're listening to you, it's one thing for that thing to be in Variety. It's another thing for a guy in the radio business to bring it up. You're bringing it up to listeners. We're going to have people calling now who are listeners, not radio executives, listeners, amateurs, who are going to be calling up radio executives saying, hey, yeah, did you see the article? This and that, you know? And the next thing, we're going to be forced to sit there and listen to an amateur's opinion, Phil, which I don't necessarily think is a constructive way of dealing with this problem.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, as long as you can buy a Variety magazine on a newsstand, and you can anywhere, people, amateurs, as you call them, are going to read these articles. And this is a very important article. And I need the audience listening to me right now to understand something.
You don't have to go into it again. You did the whole thing in a pre-show.
Well, I didn't do it on the regular show. That this is a very significant piece of journalism here, folks. What's happened here is that Variety, which is a trade journal primarily aimed at television and film people, doesn't really do a lot of reporting on radio. It does profiles occasionally. It may talk about this or that, but this is a column that has been devoted to the entire industry digging its own grave, essentially saying that radio, unlike television, which gets it and has a multitude of outlets and channels and programming, or film, in other words, it's basically saying radio, of all of the mass media, doesn't understand what's happening in the culture with digital, with internet, with the ability of people to... Look at this, man. I got somebody calling me right in the middle of my show. That's not going to happen.
Was that your phone going off?
Yes, it was.
Why don't you turn the thing off?
I'd forgotten to.
Listen, yeah, Jay, how you doing? Yeah, I'm talking to him now. I got guys walking up and saying, is he trying to kill me? I said...
Who?
You know the guy from Rhode Island, two of the station owners. I'm not going to mention their names.
Is he trying to kill me?
Yeah, hold on. I'm talking to him now. Two of these guys were, does he want me to die? Does he want me to really die? I said, no, he doesn't want you to die. I said, well, that's what he's doing. He's trying to kill us.
I'm not trying to kill anybody. What I'm basically saying is that this is an article that is saying about our industry It's over, man. Unless you guys get your act together, things are really... You know, turn that phone off, will you, bud?
Turn that thing off.
We're turning it off. And that is the that's the essential point there.
Well, you know, people walking up to me and want you, which... Yeah, I know. I got a guy crying. Hold on a second, yeah? Did you hear that? Did you hear that, Phil?
Who is that?
That's Jason Eltru. You know, he owns a station down in San Diego. He's crying like a baby, Jason.
What are you going to do it?
He's crying like a baby.
And well, that's too bad.
Well, you tell him. He just said it's too bad.
You're going to do it.
Sorry, Jason.
So, what do you want me to tell him?
Tell him anything you want. I don't care. Thanks for calling.
Oh, he's treating me like some bitch that...
So you hang up on the man as your business partner. He's got nothing to say. He's got nothing to say. As usual, he's got nothing to say. He's calling me up and telling me I shouldn't be talking the way I'm talking because it's giving guys heart attacks. Well, there it is. There's the article. There's the headline. Radio digs its own grave as cultural currents shift. The major music business, the new music business, is built upon radio. It depends upon it. There's a fiction that we still live in a monoculture. This concept has been blown apart on television where there are 500 channels available. But listen to this. But the Luddites in radio still believe the internet didn't happen and that we're all prisoners of the dial where there are few stations and little innovation.
What's a Luddite?
A Luddite is essentially some clown that doesn't know machines exist. The Luddites in radio still believe the internet didn't happen. There are radio alternatives, Pandora and the forthcoming iTunes radio. Please don't confuse Spotify and radio and Deezer and Daisy with radio. They're nothing of the sort. Anyway, there's a whole... What is Deezer and Daisy?
I don't know. I'll ask my son, but I think those are different ways that you can load, or whatever they call it, load down?
Well, download.
Download.
Download the music, yeah.
All right, but in other words, they're ways of accessing... traditional radio content in ways other than going to radio. That's the whole thing. And that's what's happening. And that's what we've been talking about for 10 years on our show. That's what we've been talking about during our pre-shows. And that's what we're letting the consumers know. And really, when I talk to people like wherever it is, you know, talking to them about radio, I'm talking to people I suspect who are really, really active listeners. A lot of them probably work in the business. And so I'm sort of preaching to the choir. The average guy... doesn't know from, he flips his radio on, and if it sounds like crap, he brings his iPod the next day. Or he gets a subscription to Sirius or XM. But if he flips on the radio and he hears nothing but garbage coming out of that thing, for instance, nothing but nonstop conservative talk, I mean, that's what murdered talk radio, conservative talk radio, and I'm not saying it's because it's a conservative point of view. What I'm saying is, the sameness of the same point of view over and over and over and over and over again, murdering every other kind of spoken word radio, and that's what did it, man. And if a guy gets into his car and he flips the radio on and he hears that crap, he's gone, he gets his iPod or whatever, and he's on to the next thing. You know, and the reason why I talk about it is I've got this platform. I might as well start talking about it.
Yeah, you said you don't even care what happens to people.
I don't care. I don't care what happens to radio. I only care what happens to me. There are radio alternatives, it says here. Streaming services are retail replacements, lending libraries, wherein for $10 a month, you can go into the store and borrow anything you want as long as you return it. Also, you're not limited to one album at a time. The radio alternatives represent market fragmentation because internet in the car is not yet here on a widespread basis. They've had the impact on car listening. Then again, we've experienced tapes in the car, CDs and iPod hookups. Terrestrial radio listenership is not close to what it once was. Radio used to dominate. It's still the biggest player, but its market share has receded dramatically. And don't worry about it. It'll keep on receding dramatically. Because right now, the guys we got running the show in this business, these guys are too stupid. Believe me when I tell you, folks, this is not the generation to turn it around. It's going to continue to erode until we finally do get some executives or leadership in our industry where they know what the hell is going on. All right, so there is your education in the radio business.
Yes, and good luck, Phil, with your future, because these people...
Yeah, they're going to... They'll do a... What is it called? A ball.
Yeah, they'll ball you, man.
They'll ball me? You mean blackball?
Yeah.
Ball me. We'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show. Bill Cowher crashes his Mercedes-Benz in New York City. How about that, huh? And grab your Kleenex, baby. A dog, that's right, a dog, buries another dog in what some think is a sign of mourning. Buries a dead dog, like a burial, like a funeral, like a religious... Anyway, we'll talk about it. We come back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What are you talking about? No dog has a religion.
Well, unless it's, I don't know, what do they consider...
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This boating accident at Lake Powell, is this, bud?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't know.
Well, turn the fan off, will you please?
It's hot in here, Phil. It feels like it's living hell in here.
I understand, but we have to have the fan off because it's making noise.
Yeah, I know, man, but I'm sweating like an ape in here.
We are all sweating like... We're sweating like animals in the jungle. Is that what you want? Is that what you foresee? For us to sweat?
I'm not asking you guys to sweat. I'm just saying it's a studio. It's summertime. It gets warm. I'm sorry, all right? I'm sweating, too.
Well, I'm a woman, and I think I'm deserving of some comfort.
Why?
What did you say?
Well, I'm just saying, why?
Because I'm a woman, and because... Never mind.
She's a female, so, you know, there is a little extra comfort that should be taken into consideration.
No, I don't understand why, though.
Yeah, why?
Because that's what you do. When you're a gentleman, you think of the comfort of the ladies first. That's what we do. That's what we do. And that's what we do. Okay?
Don't make any sense. There ought to be reason for stuff.
There's some stuff that we just don't ask reasons about. Why do you pull a chair out for a lady? You just do. Okay?
Yeah, a lot of people don't do that anymore.
No, I know. Believe me, I know that. You want to know who I hear about that from? Women. Go out on a date with a woman and pull her chair out. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get... First of all, if the hostess is a female, she's going to say, oh, my God, I swear to God, they're going to think you're the greatest guy in the world. Try it sometime. It's happened to me. I don't know how many times you go into a restaurant with a female, you pull her chair out, which is what I was taught to do from years ago. I'm not saying I'm something special. It's just you were taught that. The whole generation of guys coming up now, they don't know this stuff. Well, here's one other thing you guys don't know. The women who, you know, because...
Well, what, are you going out with teenagers now, Phil?
No, I'm not dating teenagers, no. Women in their 30s, okay? You pull her chair out, and they look at you like, oh, my God, what a gentleman, and oh. And they talk about it. Guys today are the biggest slobs. So?
But you figure if you learn how to do that?
Yeah, if you learn how to do that, maybe things go a little bit more your way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know about that, man.
I'm telling you. I've seen it happen a million times. Pull a chair out, and they're, oh, God, you'd never see guys do that anymore. It's just so amazing, and oh, my Lord, and this and that and something else. Because most guys, I don't know what it is. Guys today, not a lot of them, but you know how it is. Guys today are pretty much still their mama's little boy. I don't know how else to put it, but they got bigger issues than how to treat women, you know. They just figure it's all bitches bad. And have you heard that song, Bitches Bad, by, I think it's Kendrick, I don't know who it's, but Lupe Fiasco.
Who?
Lupe Fiasco.
Who's he?
He's the guy that does the song Bitch is Bad.
Yeah, Lupe, pretty good.
Okay. Well, it's a great song because he talks about how these messages of bitch and what... He talks about what bitch means and what bad means. Bad to a man could mean that she is just unprincipled and immoral. Bad to a female could mean that she's a badass. She kicks ass and she can hang with the guys. But it depends on the message when it finally arrives at the generation coming up, the little girl that hears that. Is she bad because she's immoral? Is she bad because she kicks ass? And what does all that mean? And what is the message to the little boy? So in the song, in Lupe Fiasco's song, he talks about that. And he talks about how there's no parenting in a lot of situations. There's no one there who is sort of acting as the interpreter of this stuff as they hear it coming out of the radio or the television. So the kids are left to be mentored by the rappers, the hip-hop people who are just simply trying to make an impression for entertainment purposes. They're not necessarily there to teach Sesame Street, you know.
Well, I don't know what you're saying, but it does sound important.
Well, that, isn't that nice?
Yeah, do a column on it, Ms. Gray.
I'm going to do a column on it. I would like you to explain what you're talking about later, but I think it's important that...
How are you going to do a column on it if you don't know what I'm talking about?
Because it sounds important, Phil.
Yeah, it doesn't sound important, Miss Henry.
Well, isn't that just nice? It sounds important. You guys don't know what I'm talking about.
Not really.
I'm talking about language. I'm talking about what the perception of language and what the word means and what it means in the culture and what it means to a little kid and what it means to the person who is singing it. You know, there's a saying that there are three authors to a song. You've ever heard this?
No.
There are three people that write a song, not one. Three. Three people. Who are those three, Bud? Bud Dickman, I'll start with you.
The three people who write the song?
Yes. Who are the three?
Lennon, McCartney.
Lennon and McCartney.
Are you some kind of a jackball? What do you mean?
What do you mean, Lennon and McCartney?
You said a three.
No, 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 no. I'll tell you.
Well, I wanted to guess.
No, 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 no. The three people that write the song, first there's the person who actually wrote it. But he hears it a certain way. He wrote the song. It's very personal to him or her. And so they hear it in their head, if you will. They hear it when they play it. They hear it as they sort of create it, the lyrics. So that's one person. The second person who writes that song, though, is the performer. Because that person has taken that song, and now they've created something different with it. They hear it a certain way. They're interpreting it a certain way. They're singing it a certain way. They're playing it a certain way. And that becomes an authorship in and of its own.
Well, now, who's the third?
The third person who writes a song is the one who hears it. We hear it a certain way. It comes into our heads, and we experience it in a way that may be completely different from the way it was written or the way it was performed.
That's the biggest load of gobbledygook that I ever did hear.
You know, I don't usually agree with Bud, but...
Well, all right, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you guys. If that's what you think, it's gobbledygook, huh?
Oh, Phil, that's the biggest load, fragrant though it may be, that ever dropped out of a cow's...
ass.
That's right.
Well, you guys can say that if you want, but I happen to think it's a brilliant observation. I didn't create that. It was something that I read. I think it's a great observation. And so it goes with that song, Bitch is Bad. That's what the guy's trying to say. It's a brilliant song, and you should hear it. It's called Bitch is Bad. It's by Lupe Fiasco. It's available now on Fernman Records and Tapes.
Really?
No, I just made that up. All right.
Fernman Records and Tapes.
I'll call up iTunes, or not iTunes. But...
I made it up. There's no such thing as Fernman Records and Tapes. Who cares? Go download it illegally someplace.
Wow, man.
That goes against everything you stand for.
Yeah, well, you think I'm going to... I've had people sit there and say to me, friends of mine will say, oh, wow, man. I'll go, well, like, what happened? Well, nothing, but I downloaded a bunch of your stuff last night, man. I go... off of my site? He goes, no, I'm sorry, man. Somebody had turned me on to... I go, dude, you know, it's okay, but I mean, you're screwing... No, I know that, man. I know I'm screwing you. I didn't mean to do that, man. I'm really sorry. It's just that it was too... And I said, well, look, dude, it's only $10 a month. Yeah, I know, but I don't have the money right now. Oh, give me a break. You don't have the money right now. So I get it, you know. Unfortunately, you know, we have to protect ourselves, and we do. But I don't want to talk about that, Robert. You're going to go and find the song wherever you find it.
Probably on YouTube or something like that.
It's on YouTube, yeah. And there's an official version of it, I'm sure, on YouTube. I haven't looked. But it's worth it to hear. And as I said, it's terrific. There's a lot of hip-hop that's out now that I really like and I think has... even Lil Wayne with that Mirror.
Well, Mirror, I think, is Lil Wayne's attempt at being... thoughtful, poetic, reflective, but in the end, it's more of the same filthy, sweating, jewels in the teeth. Got it.
Yeah, you're attracted to him.
There's something sexually compelling about Lil Wayne, yes.
You know, I'm saying you want to be taken by him?
Did I say I want to be taken by him?
You know, Margaret, you're the only woman I've ever heard who openly expresses, in your own way, a desire to be violently taken by a man.
How dare you?
Am I wrong?
You're wrong most of the time.
Yeah.
No, Miss Gray, you're talking about a guy with a cucumber.
I didn't say a man with a... I said cucumber sauce, you imbeciles.
Well, the fact of the matter is, now here's Lil Wayne.
What about Lil Wayne?
You think it'd be neat.
What's wrong with me thinking of him sweating on me?
Oh, my God. So that cucumber sauce is Little Wayne's sweat.
You know, you're such children. You don't understand women. Did I say sweat? I said that Little Wayne, I don't know. There's something about the spit coming out of his mouth.
Oh!
God.
Don't look at me like I'm a freak. You're not a woman.
So you want him to drool on you?
You want Little Wayne to drool on you?
I didn't say drool.
I can tell. That's what you mean, though.
All right, so what? You know what, Phil? If you want to know what's going on, talk to a bunch of women. Don't sit here in a daisy chain with these guys.
Hey, watch your language, okay?
Watch my language? You're talking about Little Wayne drooling on me.
Don't you want him to do that?
My husband's listening to this. I'd rather you put it another way.
What about your son?
My son is not allowed to listen to this garbage. Thank God I'm that good of a mother. My son, Jason J. Delmonico, is not allowed to listen to this crap that you do.
Thank you very much, Margaret.
Well, Phil, you asked for it, talking about Little Wayne drooling on me.
But am I wrong or am I right?
You're right, but you don't need... Well.
Yeah, see, he's right. You don't want him to talk about it or anything like that.
But I don't need you to reinforce what I already stated, you jack ball on steroids.
Well, I think that Lil Wayne drooling on you, you know, he might have like some kind of disease or something like that.
He's not that bad of a disease. Lil Wayne's problem is he drinks all that cough medicine, I think. All right.
What?
I don't know. All right, coming back, we're going to be talking about Bill Cowher cracking his car up in New York.
Down a joke or something?
Isn't that funny?
What?
Did he tell it a joke? No, he crashed the car.
Oh, what? Yeah, man, you knew. No, I didn't.
Yeah, you knew is right. We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Truth
so Little
is
Wayne,
our bitch. The Phil Hendry show.
He drooled on me. Unlimited drool.
Friday night, we told you about a boating accident Thursday night in Utah. I don't know why there's a lot about the human condition and the human experience on this planet that fascinates me, especially as we get closer as people, as communities, as nation states, as nations, as the global village is active and getting more village-like as we go along here, you know. So we know more about each other, and I get fascinated and equally, you know, sort of saddened or overjoyed by things that I see. Now, one of the things that I've been reading up on, for whatever reason, maybe it's because we see these stories this time of year, are boating accidents, drinking. Bobby Dooley, by the way, folks, has a new fan page on Twitter, Bobby Fans, and her and Steve were up at Lake Bass for the annual Lake Dash. And I'm looking at boats on fire and people, in the water. And
well, they had four boats sink?
Four boats sink, and everybody's just, you know, getting hammered waiting for a rescue. But anyway, this boat crash on Lake Powell in Utah, for me, was an example of just what are people thinking? What's going on out there, man? Now, this is one of the most tragic things. What happened on Thursday night was a boat, I will not call it a speedboat, but a powerboat, with a number of children on board and adults, ran into a houseboat, a deadly boating accident that left at least two dead. The reason why they say two dead, on Friday night there was one dead, and that was the mother, the wife of the man who was piloting the boat. I mean, you can't even imagine what the devastation this is bringing. Two women were missing. Now one woman is missing because they found one of the women, and they did this by way of sonar. Divers going into Lake Powell, and on the 23rd, which was Sunday, the body of a 29-year-old woman was recently recovered by divers thanks to the advanced robot scanner that found her remains at the bottom of the lake. You may know, you may not know, the human body We often think of human bodies when they are deceased, people when they're deceased, as floating. Bodies don't float until certain gases form that lift the body up through the water. So bodies are going to be below the surface of the water for a while until they surface as the result of those gases forming. Or they can be snagged on some underwater debris, whether it's a piece of vegetation or some man-made piece of pipe or perhaps even a boat that had sunk earlier. This poor young woman was found by these sonar robot that they were using. Now, the accident leaves the body of one more missing woman somewhere in the lake. Although there is no concrete evidence that the remaining crash victim is dead, police presume she is no longer alive, so the search has become a body recovery mission.
Why don't they think she's alive?
Because, you know, they would have found her by now, man. I mean, if she was alive, she would be on the surface of the water. If she wasn't on the shore someplace, she would at least be on the surface of the water. They would have found her by now. The body of 29-year-old Valerie Ray Bradshaw has since been taken to a medical investigator's office after being retrieved from Lake Powell's main channel by a team of divers. As for the cause of the deadly boating accident, experts who have started an official investigation believe that one boat driver was too distracted by children playing on his motorboat. His attention was diverted long enough for him not to be able to move in time before crashing into a much larger houseboat. The man, Adrian Jackman, lost his 57-year-old wife, Marilyn, in the accident, while his daughter, Jessica, and her friend, Valerie, were swept into the lake. So this young lady, Valerie, was the friend. His daughter is still missing. You imagine the hell that this man's in right now? Police are expectant that the body of 22-year-old Jessica Jackman may similarly be found this week using the same sonar technology and search robot. According to earlier reports from the boating crash in Lake Powell, the search, excuse me, folks, I'm having computer issues. The search had been called off toward the end of the week, work week last week, but was scheduled to begin again this weekend. Hopefully the victim's families and friends are coping through this difficult time as officers continue to search for the remaining missing passengers in the accident. Well, there's only one that's missing, and that is the young lady, Jessica Jackman, the daughter of the guy that was piloting the boat, man. And the bummer of this is exactly what we thought, because if you got a powerboat with a bunch of people on board and there's a houseboat, well, what the hell? I mean, a houseboat is not exactly tearing ass through the lake. And these cats get distracted and, and they're going, I don't know, you know, but so what does it take? Are they going to have to start getting more lake patrols out there and stuff? I don't know. You know, guys that are checking on, people. I mean, are they going to have like a speed cops out there or something? I was watching two guys over down in Newport Harbor one summer. I was sitting over there at that one bar.
You were in a bar. That's great. You're out there. You're just now talking about these accidents, Phil.
I was in the bar. I wasn't in a boat.
Not in a boat.
Still. It's not responsible to be... Now, let me finish.
Well, this I gotta hear.
Hold on for a minute there, Ace. Are you sitting looking at boats drinking?
Yes.
And you admit that?
Well, I gotta admit it. What's wrong?
Excuse me, I'm not finished yet. So you're getting blind, stinking drunk and watching boats, and you're going, hey, look at that, there's a boat.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
And you don't feel irresponsible? Well, I don't know.
But you could be irresponsible about him in a boat he's not in it.
I can't even understand what he's saying. It's like he's speaking some version of monkey.
What?
Margaret, you can talk all you want about how he's talking monkey. You're not making any sense either.
Are you saying I'm speaking ape?
Yeah, a little bit.
How dare you?
Well, look, if you're telling me that I'm irresponsible because I'm sitting looking at boats and I'm drunk, which I wasn't, by the way.
No, not at all.
Well, I wasn't. How is that irresponsible? If I'm in the boat, that's, now we're talking something bad, okay? If I'm hammered out of my mind and I'm in the boat, sure, that's a drag, you know? But if I'm just sitting there looking at him...
I think there's something about a man sitting and guzzling booze while he looks at boats with children on them, going out, God knows what will happen.
It's not his fault!
No, it's not his fault, but it just...
It just, okay, but I'm going to tell you this. Anybody that gets in a boat, I was sitting there, I was looking at these two guys on jet skis, and they're in the harbor there, and the harbor has got a speed limit, you know, every harbor does. Newport Beach Harbor is no different. And these two clowns were doing at least, I don't know, they looked like they were tearing ass at about 30 or 40 miles an hour. Right through the channel there. And they've got a harbor patrol there, and those guys pull your ass over. Not only did they stop them, they tied the jet skis off, and they put these guys up into their boat in handcuffs.
Why handcuffs?
They were arresting them. They were arresting them. And it was interesting, and I think they should have, too, because with these, they might have been drinking, for all I know. But there were kids that were swimming off of a dock, and they were diving and swimming, and so there were, like, you know, kids present.
What about you? What happened to you?
I didn't get arrested because I wasn't in the boat, and if you think you're going to arrest people that are drinking just looking at it, it isn't going to happen.
I think there needs to be steps in that. I don't like it. I don't like you sitting and staring at me or my boyfriend getting arrested or my husband.
Yeah, you probably, you and Lil Wayne.
I'm going to kick.
Hey, watch it, watch it, watch it. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. You did say Lil Wayne.
I didn't say going boating with him. I said he drools on me.
Phil Henry.